It's Great White's Mark Kendall today on the Radio Chatter podcast. We talk about numerous things, including Detroit rock and roll, and meeting one of his guitar heroes, Ted Nugent.
He goes, my wife drugged me down here, so this better be good.
And we talk about cover songs, like Once Bitten, Twice Shy.
It's not like, oh, we're out of songs, so let's go do a cover.
Of course, we discuss new lead singer Mitch Malloy and how he came to join the band, plus his sobriety and how he helps others stay sober as well.
You know, reach out to maybe somebody who's in trouble and just offer my sober friendship. You know, it's not like I'm offering any miracles, but just, you know, maybe some support.
He loves Frankenmuth's Greta Van Fleet. We talk about the 90s, his keys to success, and that's just for starters. Mark Kendall from Great White today on Radio Chatter.
From Detroit Rock City.
Detroit Rock City.
This is the Radio Chatter Podcast. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, I say this every time. Thank you so much for listening to the Radio Chatter Podcast. I do appreciate it. It does mean a lot to me that you choose to check this out. And we try to make it interesting for you guys. Today, it's Mark Kendall from Great White. And this is another one of those interviews where I just got a lot more out of it than I thought I was going to. Mark talks a lot about, you know, the new lead singer, Mitch Malloy. He talks about sobriety and how he helps other people. He even kind of alludes to the fact of how Jack Russell, being unsober, was pretty much forced to leave the band. We talk about cover songs and keys to success and all sorts of stuff right here on Shark Week. I don't know. It's Mark Kendall today on Radio Chatter.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. We got a great line here. You know, sometimes I get these lines and I'll have, like, you know, the publicist call, the person, and, you know, it's like a nightmare, but this is a good one, so I appreciate that.
Awesome.
So how's things, man? We're rolling. I'm ready to go. How's things with you?
Yeah, good, man.
It's cool to talk to you here on Shark Week.
Yeah, it's working out perfect.
I thought it would be kind of funny. Has anyone ever approached you guys to be, like, on Sharknado?
No, but, you know, we'll do a little something like, you know, deals on merchandise and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
What, for Sharknado?
No, for Shark Week.
Oh, for Shark Week. Okay. Have you watched any of the Sharknado movies?
I haven't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're ridiculous. That's but they're like watching a car crash. You know, and just have to keep watching them. You know, and they got all these celebrities and stuff that get killed in them. Everyone from Corey Taylor to Chris Jericho has been in there. And I think maybe even Dee Snider. You know, different guys like that. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a chain. Don't look into it too hard because it's not very good. I'm just saying. So,
okay.
You guys are making a return to the Motor City here, actually to Michigan, I should say, Friday at St. Clair River Fest. And you'll be back again Monday in Monroe. You're hitting up all the spots here, eh?
Yeah. We're playing a couple of Michigan shows. We've always kind of been close to, we've always done really good for some reason in Michigan. And so we always love to get back there.
Well, I don't think that you're the only band that's done really good in Michigan. You know,
No, we aren't.
You know,
it's the Motor City, it's the rock, and, you know, that's just the way it is there, you know.
Yeah.
Music is coming out of there, you know.
I moved out here in 1995, and actually, I remember seeing you guys one of the times. I grew up in Buffalo. Do you remember playing at the horse race track in Buffalo?
I don't.
Yeah, you guys played on the track before some horse race. They tried to get some younger people into horse racing. So the radio station I was with, we put together this little thing. As a matter of fact, I got a picture on my wall. Jack took my friend's Harley Davidson around the track a few times. So
right on.
So, but yeah, it's you spoke about Detroit music and stuff. Did that affect you in your life growing up?
Yeah, a little bit. Like when I was a teenager. You know, I was into, you know, I mean, Bob Seger, just all the music that's come out of there is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, especially, so, I mean, yeah, especially back in the day with all the classic rock bands with the Alice and Bob Seger, like you just mentioned, and Nugent and stuff like that. Were you a Nugent fan growing up?
Yeah, when Nugent, he actually came down to a show, he told me that, he goes, my wife drugged me down here, so this better be good. And, you know, and then after the show, he came up to me and goes, I didn't know you can yank and crank on that thing like that. I can't tell from your record.
That's high praise from the Motor City Madman.
That's praise from him. But, yeah, so I'd met him before, and he was kind of a hero of mine when I was a teenager. You know, he had the big record, and so, yeah, meeting him and stuff, and, Motor City Madhouse and all that. Yeah, it's an iconic place. With the fans are great. We've done real good on the radio there in the past, even in the 90s. So whatever, it's just great getting back there.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what, I remember I bought this, I got back into vinyl last year, and for whatever reason, I got on this Ian Hunter kick and I bought a bunch of his stuff. And I have to be honest, I knew that Once Bitten, Twice Shy was of course a cover, but I didn't realize it was his, and I'm playing around on it one day and I hear that song. So were you a big fan of that growing up too?
In 1984, we were on tour with Judas Priest, and our sound man was friends with Ian Hunter. So, he was kind of not doing much, and we borrowed his drum riser. It was in his backyard, so we went by there and grabbed it and threw it in the truck or whatever, and used that on the Judas Priest tour. And then, when we played the Ritz with Guns N' Roses, I think it was around 87 or 88. He was like riding in our bus with us. So we'd met him a couple times, and it was kind of a coincidence the way we did the song. Izzy Stradlin from Guns N' Roses, cause our manager managed Guns as well as us. Mm-hmm. And, he came to Alan, our manager, with that song because we had an album called Once Bitten, and the obvious follow-up was going to be Twice Shy. He comes with this song that was an Ian Hunter solo song and played it for him. He thought the lyrics were interesting and kind of a funny little song and thought it would be good for us, so he brought it to us. We had no idea it would be like a single or whatever. That was something the record company did, and we're going, well, at least we got this song and this song to back it up, you know.
Yeah.
So we had no idea it was going to take a life of its own, you know, on. And then Ian Hunter, he made so much money from that song. He got a band back together, and he was like on MTV. And we heard a funny story when he was like going to radio on the road and stuff. People were asking him why he's playing that Great White song. You know, and so it's pretty funny because I guess the song was never a big hit when he did it.
Right.
It was marginally known in the UK, but never anything that had any groundswell in the States. So, you know, all of a sudden the song becomes, you know, really big or whatever, and you know, people are, and he's playing it on the road. It's his song, you know. So, well, what the hell are you playing that Gary Wyker was on? You know? So it's pretty funny. And also, really, a coincidence how many times you ran into him because, you know, it had nothing to do with us doing this song.
Yeah, I always thought that song was like from the 50s or something. I didn't realize that song was from the 70s. I mean, you know, the 70s, you know, mid 70s for that. And then, I bought that record and I'm like, hey, wait a minute, that's that song right there. So,
yeah, that was kind of obscure, you know. We kind of tried to make it our own or whatever. And, you know, the song, well, you know what it did.
So. Right. Now, what do you think about, just kind of staying on topic, I suppose, but what do you think of doing cover songs? I know, like, the guys from Five Finger Death Punch always put a cover on their albums. The guys from Disturbed always put a cover. Are you a big fan of that stuff?
Well, yeah, you know, it keeps the records from getting scratched.
Okay.
No, you know, I mean, it's not like, oh, we're out of song, so let's go do a cover. Alan was, he was just our old manager. He was a music connoisseur, knew a lot about the British bands, and was just a historian with songs, and he would bring them to us and go, what do you think of this, man? And so, you know, a good song's a good song, basically. It's funny. You know, we, being in a band, you care more about that, like, wow, you know, we didn't write this, though, than the fans do. You know, they really don't care. I mean, at one time I got the the Three Dog Night three disc set. And, you know, I'm the type of guy that, like, reads the liner notes and stuff. And I'm going, I couldn't believe they never wrote a single song their whole career. And that just kind of blew my mind because I thought that's what bands do.
Hmm. Yeah, don't read Elvis's liner notes then.
Yeah, so in other words, fans don't really care, like, if it's a cover or if you wrote it or not. They just go by if it's good or not, you know what I mean? So it's really not. So if you make a song your own that is maybe was known in the past and you kind of do it differently, or you do an obscure cover and make it better or whatever, you know, no one seems to really care about that as much as the artist kind of goes, God, you know, I wish I would have wrote that, or, you know, but it's just really an ego trip. But most of the songs that we've done were brought to us by Alan Niven, our manager. Like, none of us really go, hey, let's do a cover, you know, let's go hunt for one or whatever. Our manager would bring it to us.
Yeah. You just touched on something. Is there some songs out there that you think to yourself, man, I wish I would have wrote that song?
God, there's so many, yeah. You know, especially like in the 70s. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And you know, I like bands like, you know, some bands, they'll say, you know, I'm a genius and, you know, here's these songs I wrote, and won't admit that they got the riff from, you know, the past or whatever. Mm. But one time I was watching this making of Machine Head by Deep Purple, and they're interviewing Blackmore, and he's telling you where he stole all these riffs. Like, I got this one from Batman, that series you have in America. You know what I mean? I got this from some Bulgarian radio station. I heard a riff, and I just, you know, took it. So I like it when they admit that, you know, they got it from here or there. But a few years back, I had Eric Burdon over for just a dinner. My wife knew his daughter. And he was telling me, because he kind of came up with the Stones and Beatles, they were all 1-4-5, you know, every song Johnny B. Goode when they started out.
Right.
They all just played, you know, they were all blues bands, and then they became songwriters. You know, they didn't, you know, they weren't the geniuses that they became. So, you know, everybody kind of looks back and, you know, takes influences from this guy and that guy. As far as doing a cover, you know, like I said, with us, they were brought to us, you know. Let's see if you guys can make this one good, you know. So that all stemmed from our manager.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
So, well, let's get into the present right now with Great White. Anything new happening with your band?
Yeah. You know, we made a record with last year, we made a record with the iconic producer Michael Wagner, and that was completely amazing.
Yeah, full circle, yeah.
To get back with him. We recently got a new singer. His name's Mitch Malloy. He's from Nashville. Kind of happened by accident. We were kind of growing apart with our singer. And so it wasn't like we were really looking for anybody, but it was getting to where, you know, we weren't really comfortable anymore. And I just seen in my news feed on Facebook this Van Halen story where this singer was secretly, like, in the band for a while. And his name's Mitch Malloy. And so I watched the little documentary on it. It was a pretty interesting story. It was like in the 90s when all this happened, when they were kind of didn't have Sammy, didn't have David Lee Roth. And they accepted him in the band. But then I guess he went home on a break. They were writing songs. They were jamming. But they took a break because Van Halen had to go on MTV to present an award. And so he's watching TV from home, watching the award presentation. And Eddie, Alex, and Michael Anthony walk on stage. And then a few seconds behind them, here comes David Lee Roth. And, you know, Mitch is like, holy God, what is going on here? You know, this is way confusing. So he ended up kind of saying, well, this isn't going to work or whatever. But and then I heard he kind of passed on being in Chicago. It was just not really his thing. And he was second in line from Journey and got beat out by the guy that sounds like Steve Perry.
Right.
Filipino singer.
Yeah.
Who sings just amazing. He's just a great singer. Arnell or something like that. And so when I saw that story, I listened to a few things he did. And we had met him in Wagner Studio. We had 20 people come down and do this like gang shout vocal. So I saw him there. And then he came up on stage with us on the Monsters Cruise just to sing the My Once Bitten, Twice Shy or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we'll have a few people come up and do that. We had Y&T and, you know, a few other people. And so I'd seen him, but this was kind of subliminal. Like, nothing was by design getting this guy in the band. I just had seen that, and I told Michael Lardy about it, and he goes, oh, yeah, I've already been kind of checking out myself. And I go, are you kidding? That's weird. You know, you never said anything to me. And so I go, well, let's send him some music and just see what it sounds like. You know, send him some old, you know, like Rock Me or, you know, a couple old ones and then a couple new ones or something and see if he's interested. And so he comes back. I guess he has his own studio. You know, he's recorded Taylor Swift and Kenny Loggins and all this stuff. So he kind of does that too. Anyway, so we get the tape back and he sounds like totally amazing. So, and we just felt like image wise, he fit the band so well, you know, he looks like us, you know, and whatever. And, so that's how it happened. He learned the songs in about 10 days. We did 3 rehearsals and we've done 3 shows with him already. So, and it's really turning out good. He's, you know, pretty laid back, no huge ego problems or anything like that. But he really gets into it on stage. It's kind of lifted our energy a little bit, actually.
Yeah.
We always get into it when we play, but there's a, you know, I mean, it could be like a pink cloud thing, like when you first get married or something, you know, how you're all excited.
Yeah, the honeymoon.
A couple months in, you know, you hate it, everybody hates everybody. But this is a case where the guy, he is pretty fun to be around and pretty positive dude. He's just a good fit for us.
Now, obviously, you and Michael and Audie are kind of like, I would assume, like the core of Great White. You guys have been there, you know, since the beginning of time. But so did all you guys kind of, you know, all you guys were kind of feeling that the other lead singer was just kind of, you guys were just kind of, you know, growing in different directions?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's just a case where we just weren't comfortable anymore, you know. He didn't do anything like radical or anything. It was just in general. He didn't really like the way we did our business and stuff. And, you know, we heard people coming back to us saying, hey, you know, he said this or that and whatever. So that wasn't really totally it. But, we just grew apart. I don't know what else to say about that. It just wasn't we weren't happy really anymore. He is a great singer though. I know he's going to do good somewhere because he's really gifted in that way. But, you know, I mean, it's not like we're going to change singers every week or anything like that. The last one was in the band for like 8 years, you know, so we just like the fit. We just think he fits Mitch Boy. He fits in every way, you know, like image wise, you know, he really knows how to engage the crowd. That's one thing I really like. He's like a natural front man. He's comfortable out there. You know, so he doesn't have to script anything. It just comes to him, you know. It's like David Lee Roth or something in that way, you know, where not everything is mapped out and you know what you're going to say every night. I mean, that is the pro way. Like every band we've ever played with, they have the same raps every night.
Yeah.
But now that you have the internet where people are seeing your show like 2 minutes after you get off stage, and if they see show after show and see you're saying the same stuff every night, you know, I mean, it's just a different world now, you know? So, it's kind of cool to have a guy that just comes with it naturally, you know?
Yeah, back in the day, you know, you could you do an interview or something, it would appear like, you know, a month later in Hit Magazine or Rip or Hip Raider or whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like now you better not cheat on your wife. She's going to find out within like a minute. You know what I mean?
So this all happened. The switch of lead singers happened really quickly. And I guess this leads me to my next question. I mean, obviously, you guys probably had dates, you know, already set up for the summertime and whatnot. But how important is it for you and the guys in the band to keep the Great White name alive?
Well, you know, I mean, We love to play, you know. We love to play live. We love to make music, and that's pretty much what we do. I never allowed myself to have anything to fall back on.
Right.
You know, I was kind of like all in from day one. It was like either I'm going to be a total bum or I'm going to do something with this guitar. And I didn't say, well, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to do this or that. I just went full straight ahead, you know. So it's pretty much my whole life, you know, is playing music. As far as keeping the band alive, it's really had no signs of really slowing down. You know, our singer just, first singer, he just got so much, you know, there's so many demons with his drug problems and whatever, it just overcame him. So that kind of just, you know, took care of itself, if you will. We really couldn't do anything about it. You know, when someone isn't willing to get well, you really can't help that person. Because I do work with addicts and alcoholics myself.
Right.
I'm kind of involved in that. And one thing I've just kind of learned, I've even gone to guys with like millions of years of sobriety and go, is this something I'm not doing? You know, because this guy just doesn't seem to get it. He keeps, you know, blowing it. And they tell me no. You know, they have to be willing. They have to like surrender to that life, you know, and get into the one day at a time or whatever. And he just wasn't willing. So that wasn't you know, like a firing or, you know, we hate each other and we've gotten all these fights. But I don't think we've even gotten an argument, you know, in 30 years. So that was a situation where we just told them to go get well and we'll just have a singer sit in. We had Jamie Lane. We had another singer, you know, just doing any given shows. I think Jenny Lane did about 10 shows, and then we had Terry Lewis kept coming in and out, and we just liked him the best, you know, so that's how he got the gig.
Now, how long have...
After,
go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead after.
Go ahead, no, it's okay. I was just saying after a few years of that, you know, we just kind of grew apart, and, you know, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. How long have you been sober?
Almost 10 years.
Wow.
But I've been getting sober since 91. It's just, you know, I'd go 2 years and then, you know, hope for the different result. And I just kept getting, you know, pain.
Yeah, right.
So then I tried again, go a year and a half. So I kind of went on like that for years. And just finally, I just decided, you know, I'm going to start listening to people that know how to do this and maybe change my life a little bit, because I kind of have the alcoholic characteristics, lying for no reason to my wife and stuff. Yeah, we just went and had burgers when it was pizza, you know what I mean? it's like, it's funny when you're an alcoholic, you're lying all the time because you're hiding your alcohol and stuff like that. So you, you're so used to lying about that that you like to start lying about everything. Man. I wanted to change all that. Just kind of really basically just come be a better person, you know. And so I started doing it the right way like 10 years ago. So that's almost 10 years. In November will be 10 years.
Well, congratulations, man. I'll tell you what, I've talked to so many artists. I just had Tammy Down on the show last week, and he quit cold turkey, smoking drugs and alcohol at the same time. He's 53 now. I guess he's been sober for 15 months. Have you talked to him?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't talked to him directly, but I know all about him because I know people close to him, and I've heard a lot about that he quit everything. You know, he had some health issues, and he just said enough is enough. So good for him, man. He's doing good, too.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I see on your Twitter feed and stuff that you like, you help these other guys and stuff, man. There's a place in heaven for a guy like you.
I just figured, I got this social media and, instead of, using it to tell everybody how great I am, maybe reach out to maybe somebody who's in trouble and just offer my sober friendship. It's not like I'm offering any miracles, but just, maybe some support and, I'll talk to them and tell them how I did it or whatever. I'm not a preacher or anything like that, but so a lot of people have come to me, and I got 108 people that I send meditation and prayers to every day that were really in bad shape, a lot of them. So, and there's a lot of people doing well, so it's a good thing.
Now, last time I talked to Jack, which was last year, I think, he was really proud of the fact that he was kind of sobered up and kind of, looking forward to, now I don't know him as well as you do, and I don't know when the last time you talked to him was, but that's the way he appeared to me anyways.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, so anyways, speaking of your Twitter feed and whatnot, I see that you're a Greta Van Fleet fan, another Michigan band.
Yeah, love Greta Van Fleet. A lot of the reason I love them so much, we just played a show with them, is, it's four guys. They, grab their guitars and write songs and sing and don't use any tape.
Right.
Auto-tune. They don't have machines playing the music. They go out, they could be out of tune a little bit, and that's fine. Or whatever, get me? Because we came from the garage. Metallica came from the garage. So we're into that old school, we used to be crappy, but now we're getting better type of deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we love to see a new band that writes their own music, sings their songs, and rock out, and I just love to see that. So we, we met them and, told them, hey, more power to you. I hope you guys do great. You're doing good now. Keep it up. Took some pictures with them and, it's a new guard coming up and we're proud of that. We love that.
Yeah, and you guys did that that Led Zeppelin, covers album and stuff and whatnot, and it's like those guys obviously, have the Led Zeppelin,
Yeah, there's some overtones in there, that's cool too, they're even reaching back to a little old school for them, and their songs are really good, They're not so scripted like 80s rock where, here comes the chorus and, that formula. It is like Zeppelin in that way. Like Zeppelin, most of their songs, any given song, it wasn't the type of choruses that was the title, Like... Like a song like Rock Me, you'll always say it every chorus, right?
Right.
They had songs that were called, Over the Hills and Far Away or whatever, and they didn't go Over the Hills and Far Away,
Right.
That, like, they titled songs, but it wasn't like a reoccurring chorus, it wasn't really predictable, but it was tasty, it was, so... They kind of have a little bit of freewheeling in them, you know, and at such a young age, it's pretty impressive.
Have you heard their new song, When the Curtain Falls? Have you heard that one yet that came out last week?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard it. I heard a couple songs that are just floating around on the internet, and I really dug it.
Yeah.
A couple people that told me about them, that was before we knew we were playing with them. And I checked them out right away, and I liked it right away. I like the guitar sound and everything. You know, pretty good guitar sounds for such a young man to have that kind of a tone. You know, usually you have to, you know, go out and search for your sound your whole career. You know, like Billy Gibbons, I was in Reno and I was in a vault that had millions and millions of dollars of gear, from guitars to pedals to old amps and whatnot. And I was down there for quite a while just checking stuff out. The guy told me Billy Gibbons was in there 4 hours checking out old pedals. Guy's like in his 60s, and he's down there trying to find it. You know, I mean, that's inspiring for me. I just think that's awesome.
I'm not a guitar player, but I just talked to Rich Robinson the other day, and he said the exact same thing. He likes the guy's tone.
Yeah. You know, a lot of that comes from the fingers. You know, I have, you know, a few people that ask me, like, how do I get that sound or whatever, and it's pretty much whatever I play through, it's pretty much sounds similar. And I'm sure it's that way for a lot of guitar players, Eddie Van Halen. If he plays through my gear, it's going to sound like Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So a lot of it comes from the hands. There's not that much magic about your tone or whatever, or what kind of stuff you're using. I mean, that is part of it, but it's not, it's a small percentage of how you get your sound. It's really coming from the man.
Right. Hey, a couple more things here for you. I'll let you loose, and I appreciate the time, Mark. It's been a really pleasure talking to you. A lot of bands, I'm always curious to talk to bands that come out of the 80s like you guys did, and to find out how did you take the 90s? Because the 90s, I mean, it was a generational shift in music that I was a part of it on the radio and stuff. But, you know, tell me about your thoughts on the 90s.
It was very tough on all the bands. You know, even upper echelon bands like the Scorpions, they really didn't work that much in the 90s because of the Seattle boom or whatever you want to call it. So we just kept playing. We were playing like mid-sized venues, you know, just went out on a bus and just played through the 90s kind of like that. And then it seemed like around the 2000s, it started to come back a little bit. You know, they heard that long enough to where it wasn't new anymore.
Uh-huh.
And then our stuff started to come back a little bit. And, you know, right now, for some reason, there's a little bit of a surge. You know, so it comes and goes. For some reason, we play the type of music that there's a possibility that something could swim by, and people are going to, you know, gravitate to it. You know, unlike country music, where they fill arenas no matter what's going on musically anywhere. It doesn't matter. You know, it's always, you know, people that follow country just do that. They don't go, oh, but check out this new band from, you know.
That's right.
From wherever, you know, let's go watch that now because that's the new thing. That doesn't happen with country, but with our music, it kind of does. I mean, I don't know how many times rock has been dead. I remember in the 70s hearing it, it's just completely over. You know, rock is dead. And then in the 80s, I heard it again. It's something that I guess is supposed to go away and come back all the time or something. I know, it's crazy.
Was there any of the 90s bands that you liked?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few. For one thing, when Nirvana came along, I loved it. I you know, even though it ruined my career or whatever, but no, it didn't. But, you know, it was such a breath of fresh air to hear that raw guitar and, like, you know, kind of like the I don't care vibe, you know, and going, man, it's so refreshing, you know, to hear that. because it was starting to get watered down toward the end of the 80s. Everybody sounded the same. There was so much reverb everywhere, and the songs are really predictable. So, and part of that's the industry. You know, when something works, they want their whatever band, and they want it. Keep it going, you know, because so-and-so was successful doing it. And the same thing happened with Nirvana. It's like you see bands follow them, and they're wearing the same clothes. They have more Pendletons, more Levi's, you know, more, you know. I think that's kind of created by the industry. But one of the bands I thought was a real good band was Alice in Chains.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
I really liked them. The way there was something about the way they did their harmonies. It was more of a dark kind of approach,
but right.
Very tasteful. And they wrote really killer. And that singer was a shame he died, because that dude's voice was freaking amazing. He was a real, real good singer. I don't know his name.
Yeah, Layne Staley.
Yeah. Yeah, great singer, man, that dude. And his image and everything, he was real good. Yeah, I remember seeing a picture of him, I'm going, oh, that's the guy that sings, yeah. This dude is badass. So that was one that kind of stuck out for me, because I'll listen to anything. I mean, one of my kids, you know, every song is like called Kill Your Parents, you know, he's into that. And I go, you know, that song's pretty cool. At least there's, you know, there is some melody in it, you know. I just don't like, you know, I don't care how heavy it is, but if it has no melody attached to it whatsoever, it's just, I don't want to sound old and like, turn that shit down.
Right, right.
It's just like, it sucks. It's not good. It's just noise. It's like, where's the music? It's, you know, it's just like screaming. There's not one guitar melody. There's no solo. There's not, you know what I mean?
Right, right. So, yeah.
But I've also heard stuff that he has that's super heavy, and it does have melody to it. And I go, now that's badass. That's what you should be listening to, not that other garbage. You know, so,
I think we're on the same wavelength when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm with you completely.
Yeah. I don't care how heavy it is. It's not like, man, if it's not blues rock, it's not good. I don't care if it's Frank Sinatra. I don't care who it is. If there's some kind of memorable thing that I can take with me somewhere and remember, you know, I mean, give me something. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I'm with you on that. Hey, final thing here for you, Mark, and we'll cut you loose. I appreciate the time, like I said. So you talked about, you know, that this is really your only plan, your plan A, and you don't really have a plan B. So what do you think has been the key to your success for going over 35 years with your career?
That we just continue to make new music, because that's what gives us our energy, is we... You know, just don't go out and play once a week and flash out once a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we continue to write music and we continue to be creative. That's what keeps us motivated, you know, to make new music. You know, these days it is a different world. You know, people are going to probably just download your songs, and, you know, people don't buy millions of records. We don't have MTV. We don't have radio. You know, so it's a little more difficult getting the music to the people, but we do it for our own energy. I think that keeps it fresh for us, you know, to not just become an oldies band and or whatever. So that at least that's what keeps us wanting to continue to do it, because I have the pipe dream all the time, like, I'm going to come with the song that's just going to make me, you know. I honestly believe that. I believe that the song is coming. It's going to blow minds, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that also keeps you... It's almost like you're in competition with yourself, you know. You know you can do it. You know you can get one better. And that also keeps me going.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. Like, I do all these interviews and stuff, and people always ask me, like, what's your favorite interview? I'm like, well, it's usually the one I'm about to do because I look at it as another challenge. You know what I'm saying? And the same thing with writing songs, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny how the music becomes bigger than the band. It's there's so many songs, like, you could go up and ask 20 people who did Spirit in the Sky, because you hear it all the time on the radio. You know, Spirit in the Sky, you know, that's just an example. I'll bet nobody could tell you who did that song.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, oh, it's such a great song. I don't know who did it. You know what I mean? It's like there's so many songs like that that dwarf the band. It makes the band disappear because they just live on. It's like, it's almost like the music is bigger than any one person in the band. At least it becomes that for the iconic bands. It's just an example, but you know, we just keep it going. We love what we do, and we love to play live. That's my favorite thing, is playing live, because you don't have to wait to find out if it was good or not. You know what I mean?
That's right.
When you do a record, you are in like this limbo period that drives me out of my mind. I mean, I got to find things to do. I went and played in the World Championship pool, you know, in New York. And
really? Are you a good pool player?
Yeah.
Really?
I played just a hair under pro speed, but I've beat pros before.
Nice.
I mean, I can't line them up and, like, just mow them down or whatever, but, I can go win a couple matches. I do that. A friend of mine is a world champion. He's my good friend. He comes over and runs, like, 300 balls, you know, and all this stuff. So he's ran 400 twice.
Wow.
He's ran 363 on my table and on 313. He runs 200 like it's nothing.
Jesus.
And the tournament I played in last year was the World 14-1 straight pool tournament in New York. So the guys that come to that tournament are from all over the world. They're from all these different countries, you know, so they're all like the best players. And I won two matches, you know, which I was thrilled, you know, even though it was like out of the money or whatever, but.
That's kick-ass. Yeah, I got a pool table in my house, too, and I should play in it more.
My best match, I lost, but I had two big runs in that match. The guy ran 80-something on me and out. I didn't get back to the table.
Ugh.
But that was my best match, and I lost. My favorite match, I lost.
So you are quite literally a pool shark.
That's funny. I got to keep myself busy when I'm in that limbo period. But when we go play live, if you suck, they're going to let you know. You know, but if you do a good show, they're going to let you know that too instantly. You don't have to wait.
Right.
So playing live is my thing. I just love playing live.
Well, you'll be playing live this coming Friday, St. Clair River Fest, and Monday in Monroe, Michigan. A couple other dates in there as well, but those are two in Michigan.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you what, man. Hey, Mark, a couple things. First of all, good luck with the new lead singer, Mitch Malloy. Congratulations on your sobriety, man. That is so awesome, and continued success, and we'll see you here in Michigan.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on the show. You do a great show, and appreciate you keeping the music going, man.
That's really some good stuff, man. Mark Kendall from Great White today on the Radio Chatter podcast. You know, some of these guys, they hold their sobriety like a badge of honor. Like they conquered it, man. It's theirs. And they love talking about it. And that's pretty cool. With the exception of one interview I did not that long ago with Dorothy from Dorothy Martin. She didn't want to talk about the moment she decided to get sober, which a lot of these guys will talk about. But that's cool, to each their own. I mean, hey, she doesn't tell me anything. She doesn't owe me anything. That's for sure. But it's really cool when these guys open up. And especially with a guy like Mark helping other people become sober as well. And I'm talking a little bit about Jack Russell leaving the band, bringing Mitch Malloy in, and all this stuff after their last lead singer. So it was pretty good conversation today with Mark Kendall. So got to thank him for taking the time out. And thank you guys for listening. Hey, coming up next on the Radio Chatter podcast, it's Rich Robinson, formerly from the Black Crowes, now with a band called the Magpie Salute. And we talked about a bunch of things. But one of the things was actually getting together and playing again with Mark Ford. Here's a little snippet of that.
And Mark and I weren't really able, you know, and also, I mean, obviously we played a role. It's not just someone's fault, but you know, we never really fostered a personal relationship, although musically it was always there. I mean, from the first moment he and I played together. And so, but you know, this time around we got a chance to kind of work that out and become friends and really get to know each other. You know? So I think it's really cool. And we're pretty vigilant to maintain that, this whole band, to maintain that positive attitude, because we don't want to sink into the misery that became the Black Crowes.
Rich Robinson from the Magpie Salute, and of course, formerly from the Black Crowes, coming up on a future edition of the Radio Chatter podcast within the week here. So subscribe, check back. If you like this podcast, by all means, give it a 5-star rating, write a review if you would. I'd appreciate that as well. And share it with your buddies. Like I said, follow me on the socials too, at Meltdown WRIF. A good one today with Mark Kendall from Great White. More good ones coming up here in the future. Thanks so much for rocking and listening to the Radio Chatter podcast.